Meet Sebastian Dutch, a DJ and music producer, arguably Zambia's biggest house DJ. On this episode, we talk about his musical journey, what inspires him, how he keeps learning new things, and the importance of education and how that translates into business. We also talk about his latest compilation album, Smoke and Thunder. Join the conversation. Welcome to Conversations with Lila V. Sebastian. How are you?
I'm good. I'm all right. As of this recording, I'm COVID-free.
That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah. It's tough times trying to get through the pandemic day by day.
And that's all we can do, hey? We just have to take it a day at a time. I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. I really wanted to interview you. I've wanted this podcast to happen for like how long? Well, this conversation, because
2 years.
Yeah, basically, because I think you're just such an amazing person. You're such an amazing creative talent, and you've had so many like major moments, I feel like, that I've never even gotten the chance to talk to you about, so I'm excited for this day.
Okay, yeah, let's go. Shoot.
Let's shoot. Okay, well, I'm gonna ask you to tell me a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up.
Okay. First things first, obviously, I was born and raised in Dola. I don't think many people realize that, and my friends from the Copper Belt always tell me that, you know, you've evolved into such a Lusaka person. But I was born and raised in Dola. I grew up there, went to high school there, went to a notorious boarding school in the outskirts of Dola as well.
Why is it notorious?
So it's called Chuala. It's Chuala Boys Technical High School. I don't know if it's still a boys-only school now. I think it became just Chuala High School. I think even Chef rapped about it in one of his songs. I think in that How Come Nonsense, once in Chuala song, he talked about it. I think the school was just like, because it was a boarding school and it was a guys-only school, it had built a reputation around having naughty kids and the like. But just like in Lusaka, it's probably like, in Osaka, there's a school called Kafua Boys, which has got a similar reputation as the school I went to. Yeah, but it was a good school. It was a good learning experience, and education standards there are really high, despite everything that was said. You know, even it being a government-run boarding school, it was still a good place to be. So aside from that, I played a lot of sports when I was young. Couldn't play football, played a lot of rugby. I had an opportunity to actually represent my country at junior levels in the national team. From there on, I think I started developing the music, the love for music, because growing up, I used to listen to a lot of like rock music. I still do listen to rock music. I used to listen to a lot of rock, a lot of indie rock from the UK, you know, bands like Bloc Party, Boy Kill Boy, The Kooks, Arctic Monkeys. Then I also used to listen to like rock music, Linkin Park, Nickelback, Evanescence. And because, you know, in those days, growing up as a teen, and you're listening to rock music was considered evil, demonic, you know. And one of my favorite bands still to this day is Slipknot.
I love Slipknot. Yeah. I remember people finding, like, I remember I had to like remove the CD covers and like hide them, because if an aunt or whoever even just saw the visuals, they were like, what is this satanic music? And at least back then I had like a Discman, so I could just play it and listen without the whole house having to hear what I'm listening to.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people, I think my parents as well, you know, had spoken about the music I listened to. So I I didn't want to really conform because I, even till now, not that I have anything personal against it, even till now, hip hop is not my favorite genre of music. And I'm nothing against rappers or hip hop superstars or the genre itself. I do listen to hip hop every now and then, but it wasn't just my cup of tea at the time. I think I couldn't relate to a lot of the things that were being spoken about in that music. So in the quest to find something different, I found Daft Punk. I remember at the time they had a video for the song One More Time, used to play on TV. And I was a huge Dragon Ball fan, Dragon Ball Z fan growing up. So the animation caught my eye because it was very Japanese style for that video. I started digging up who Daft Punk is, getting more into the music, then discovering David Guetta in the process. He had some old tracks that he did with The Egg. That was early days of EDM. And then in that process of like discovering what else I could listen to, I came across an artist called Deadmau5. This guy changed my life, basically. So he had a song called I Remember that came out, I think, in 2008. Had a music video for it with Cascade, Haley on vocals. So I remember there was the MTV EA Maze or something like that, and he was like the in-house DJ for the awards. So MTV were running his song as MTV Fresh. So every hour, the song played. So they were rotating between I Remember and Ghosts and stuff. And I fell in love with Deadmau5. I was like, I love this. This, whatever this is, I love it. So lucky enough, I had a friend of mine at the internet cafe where I used to collect music. And I dashed there and I downloaded Deadmau5's albums, as many as I could. And that was it. I was hooked on dance music. I was forever hooked.
Wow, that's so amazing. I do know how much you love Deadmau5 because we've spoken about it before. But that's so amazing that you really sort of also stuck by the kind of music that you like, didn't fall into peer pressure of listening to other genres or even just becoming that person where you're like, yeah, that song is dope. Yeah, also, I love Drake. Yeah. And, you know, then meanwhile, mm-hmm. you don't even really like Drake. You're just trying to go along with the crowd. So I like that very early on, I can see before your career even began, you've always kind of had your own way of wanting to do things, your own vision.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, like, how did you actually now go from obviously loving and admiring these EDM DJs and these different genre DJs into now becoming a DJ yourself?
At the time, growing up in Ndola, because obviously my love for dance music has started to grow, I started to observe through social media that a lot of these dance acts are actually DJs. And at the time, one of my closest friends, my life brother, DJ Drill in Chimunya Hamonga is his real name. At that time, we already had established a very strong friendship because we lived in the same area. And he was basically producing music at the time out of his backyard, like making hip-hop beats for kids in the hood who want to, you know, basically start their music careers, and he'll charge them cheap to record. So because he had like a music background in the church, he kind of had already like had his first steps into making music. So I would be found around him a lot, learn what he's doing, you know, so that I could eventually also learn how to make music. So when I discovered dance music, I knew this is what I wanted to make. I kind of spent time around him. He had also discovered house music, but not the house music I was listening to. He was more into like the DJ Cleos and the DJ Sabu at that time, you know? So we started the journey basically together. He was producing music. He was ahead of me. He was producing music. I was learning from him, and I was learning how to make music also via YouTube and stuff like that. And in one of Deadmau5's EPs, there's a song, I think it's called This Is The Hook, where he there's a robot voice that's basically speaking out how that beat was created. And I actually followed that song and I learned how to make like house music from that song. And yeah, and basically hanging around Drill, who was a great musician, he still is, though he's not in the music business full time anymore. But I just, yeah, spent time hanging around him, experimented a lot. And in that process, had an opportunity to come to Lusaka for tertiary education. And at that time, I'd already started learning how to DJ myself because other DJs, the DJs I was following on social media were DJing. So I had started learning how to DJ, had collected my first CD bag. So when I came to Lusaka the first time, I went to Hollywood City and I met up with DJ Hussein. At the time, we didn't know each other. I just knew there's a huge DJ in Lusaka. His name is Hussein. He plays at one of the best spots in Lusaka at the time, Hollywood City. I took myself there, humbled myself, said, look, I want to DJ. And he was like, okay, cool. Here you go, you know? And I kind of like had a mini audition for in front of him. He was like, you're really good. You just need to practice some more and let's stay in touch. And that's how we swapped numbers. And from there on, like our friendship started. About that time, I was also involved with a DJ called Dachau and JT. These guys were playing at UNSA, the students club there. It was called Club Focus for some reason, because you know, it used to take focus away from students. But
I love the name, so, ironic.
Yeah, exactly. So we had like a club in the university was called Focused. Wow. So basically between Dachau and JT, they used to have changeovers. So Friday, JT would start, Saturday, Dachau finishes, and they'll swap the next day. So in between there, these guys basically, they just like me. They just like my humbleness and everything. And they allowed me to basically play like 45-minute sets in between changeovers. And that's how I started getting used to playing for crowds, you know, early on. At the same time, I met TK from Romaside and had some experience working with him in a studio environment. So nothing, we never really did anything at that time, you know. So eventually from all of those experiences, then I kind of like came back to Ndola, had to like refocus, figure out what I really wanted to do, you know. And that's when the name Sebastian Dutch came, because that was my first DJ name. No.
Now, where did it come from? Because I don't think I've ever asked you.
So at the time I was refocusing, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my education, with my life, with my music, how I'm gonna combine everything. I figured I wanted a name that is, it doesn't sound like a gimmick, you know, per se. It just sounds like a name. That's one of the first things I thought about, because I at the time I was really exploring and seeing that sometimes, you know, authenticity doesn't come from being called DJ Robotronics or something like that, you know, but just like your name. So that's how the whole Sebastian thing came up. Sebastian Dutch thing came up. The Dutch comes from the Netherlands, because at the time, all the big DJs were coming from the Netherlands. Tiesto, Freddy Legrand, and all of those guys. Then the Sebastian is just basically like my middle name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love that. No, I love that you actually thought about the possibility of like future, like longevity with your career, even just like branding, mm-hmm. because, you know, some of our DJ names from, you know, high school, you can't really transition into a professional platform with some of exactly. those names.
Exactly. I have actually been having some of these conversations with DJs, like, you know, you can't be called DJ Big Bums forever. Like, how are we going to, how is said network going to want to work with DJ Big Bums on a big project that involves, you know, different types of media and selling their brand with DJ Big Bums? I don't, you know. So those are kind of things that young DJs need to think about when they're starting their careers as well.
That's very true. So I want to jump a little bit further ahead and talk about one of our late friends, DJ LBC. And so I think basically I first met you when I joined Rock FM, I think. And
yeah,
that's when I also met LBC. And then obviously you guys were working on music together. You guys were both, you know, DJs, performers, musicians. So I just remember going and like supporting you guys when you're promoting your album and stuff, and just seeing how you guys work together and witnessing like that energy and that synergy. So I just wanted to know a little bit about how did that relationship come about? How did that project come about?
So I met LBC in a very weird way, in a very kind of cool but weird way. It's a very funny story. So at the time, I used to listen to QFM a lot. Every time I'd be home, I'd work in my dad's store. And Saturdays, he would always have QFM on. And I had noticed there was a guy who was playing house music. And definition of dance, Saturday morning, 9 hours, pushing house beats. And I was like, this is the guy. Like, I have to meet this man. Like, you know, I have to send him my tape. I have to, you know. So basically, LBC had announced that he was gonna host the Big Brother eviction party at what's the name of it? At LIV. I don't know if it's
yes, 54, LIV.
I don't know. Yes, yes, yes. At LIV. At the time, well, it was one of the nicest, biggest clubs in Osaka. So what we did, like me and my friends in Ndola, we came up with this plan. Like, let's bombard, like, as basically having people sign up on Twitter for that specific reason in Ndola. So we basically bombarded his Twitter with, like, let Sebastian Dutch open at the party. Like, every day, 30, 40 people would be sending this guy tweets to say, let me open for him, you know? So after, like, 4 days of constant bombarding, he finally DM'd me and he was like, send me your number. So I sent him my number. He gave me a call. He was like, okay, please tell your people to stop bugging me. I get it. It's cool. If you can get to Lusaka, you can play and I'll pay. That's cool. And I was like, okay, cool, done. And we stopped bugging him. We basically, I think Friday came. No, Saturday actually came. I traveled, left Ndola in the morning, came to Lusaka. My grandma lived here, so I was staying with her here. And I met him. Just, you know, he says, you know, he was like, okay, despite you guys irritating the hell out of me, like, I got your point. It was a good campaign. Now you're going to play. And then while we were there, we started talking more about dance music and how it can grow and how he spent time in the UK and he's seen these scenes. And I had the opportunity then to start playing some of the music I had made that had never been released or had been released badly, you know. And he listened to the music and he was like, this is really good. We need to polish this stuff and then start getting it out there. And I think at that instant, we kind of formed a friendship, you know. The friendship had started first of all through the music, obviously. Then eventually we started forming a bond. He became like a second dad to me, you know, because I was very young. I think I must have been like 21 or 20 at that time, if not less. So we basically formed a great bond from there, you know. He basically, you know, I was in an industry which I had no clue about. I was DJing, I was in the entertainment industry. So a lot of things were coming at me really fast. And he was kind of there to like guide me and tell me, no, we can't do this. And yes, we can, you know. Even some of the bad experiences I had had with like other music producers, previous people I'd worked with, you know, he kind of just like pulled me out of those situations. He introduced me to the people at So Good, which eventually helped me release my first releases, my first musical hits. He introduced me to people at Rock FM, where I eventually met you, started working there as well. They taught me radio. That's basically what happened. Until obviously, you know.
So let's talk about the reason why I wanted to talk about the power of the drum is mm-hmm. because I find it, like you've already mentioned, when you say you make music. So going back to that statement or everything that we're saying, for people, someone who might be listening and isn't that familiar with mm-hmm. you, you're not a person who spins records kind of DJ. Like, I mean, you can do that, you do that, but like, you're not just that. Mm-hmm. Like, you actually make your own music.
Yes, I do. Like every single thing out there that has my name on it has a musical input from me. That's everything. Every single thing. If you go to my Spotify, my Apple Music and everything and find music there, everything has, you know, me involved in it. So not only do I DJ, like you said, I sit down and make beats from scratch myself.
And you also work with, I mean, we know people who you've worked with, like Kiki, other musicians as well who are singers. So vocalists, you've worked with instrumentalists. You yourself can play, you know, some drums and I don't know what else you can play. Like, why is it important for you to try and incorporate or encompass all of those things in your music? Does it just come naturally? Is it something that you feel just adds a special touch, or is it just part of the Sebastian Dutch formula?
I think, you know, music is universal. And being inclusiveness, like adding different elements to your music always just makes it special. One thing I realized, like I wish I knew earlier, is that, you know, no matter what you do, a human being is made in a way that they'll musically sound a certain way no matter what. It's just how God made you. That's just how it is. So even if you get a song and you try and copy the exact same song, eventually your mind will sway to what you really are. You can't copy the exact, so it will sway to you. It will still end up sounding like you. So when you incorporate other people, when you add other instrumentalists, when you add other singers, it makes the music more dynamic, if I can use that word. It basically adds things that you are limited yourself to adding. For example, if I work with a singer, I am not a great singer. So already I'm limited there. So why must I force my way to singing on my own tracks when I can work with so many amazing singers that are out there, you know? And so forth, instrumentalists. I can't play guitar, but if I'm with James or I'm with Mike and they say we're gonna play some guitar here, you know, it makes everything more beautiful.
Yeah, that's so true. I love that that's the way that you think, because even as you talk about how you met Hussein and built that friendship, how you met LBC and built that friendship, and even just me personally knowing you, I feel like you also attract that energy, or you attract those relationships where it's about collaboration. And I think it's unique because I think it's just like an energy thing that you can feel with certain people where you're like, oh yeah, I can work with this person seamlessly, or I can collaborate with this one. Because we know in this industry, whether it be anything in creative, whether it's film, music, there are just certain people who don't want to share the shine, who don't want to collaborate, who want to take all the credit. So I think it's, as you're saying, it's also part of like God's plan for you. In terms of like the steps that you've been able to take, the people you've been able to meet and maintain relationships with.
Yeah, that's very, very true. That's very, very true.
Yeah, so I want to talk about, so you've had like so many different milestones, but one that I never really got to talk to you about was the one where you went to Ibiza.
Yeah.
And you actually, like you were on a proper big international stage. Forgive me if I don't know that you've been on an international stage before in that way, but what was that experience like?
Oh, it was amazing. I think that whole experience was a turning point in my career, honestly. I never needed that trip more than anything, you know. To be honest, after LBC passed on, I kind of just lost it, honest truth. You know, I wasn't really myself. You know, I struggled to accept what had happened, you know. And because I think of my age or immaturity, it took me a bit of time to come to grips with what had happened. So obviously I found ways of coping that were not the best, you know, to get through the whole situation. So I had stopped. I remember I had even reached a point where I was barely making any music. I was gigging a lot because I was, you know, my DJing never really went anywhere. So I was gigging a lot. Partying Hard became pretty infamous for like very high energy performances, you know, through that period. I think 2016, 17, 18, you know, Oktoberfests, you know, jumping on stages, jumping off tables.
It was, you know, very unlike down. The Sebastian that some of us had seen in the past, but at the same time, well, anyway, I'll let you finish your thought and then maybe I can tag in. But yeah, you're saying you were jumping all over the place, high energy.
Yeah, high energy, you know, like basically chugging down whiskey bottles and vodka bottles on stage, you know, picked up a smoking habit in the process. You know, it was quite a crazy time. I was literally living the rock star life, you know. I had a great residency at a Black Saddle, which was also like really amazing. So by the time I was getting to the point which I was traveling to Ibiza, the Sebastian Dutch didn't really know who he was, you know. So when I won the Axe DJ competition, you know, I remember first we had to like participate in a few shows locally, and then we had to send in a mix to Black Coffee's team in SA. And when I finally got the nod to do the for the competition, I won the competition, and you know, the whole process, getting ready, eventually traveling for it. When I got to Ibiza, like, I saw such a different side of the world that I had never imagined, first of all, see. But what really changed me is I met a few people there that were very influential in the rest of my career, you know. I had spoken to, for example, Da Capo. We all know Da Capo is a big DJ from South Africa, you know?
Yeah.
I met him in Ibiza. This guy was so chilled. He was so, like, we just met for the first time, but we conversated so much. He was so chilled. He told me so much about the industry. He pushed me, you know? He kind of, like, inspired me, like, don't stop doing this. Keep going. I've been at this for a long time, you know? I met Ino Napa as well, who was such a huge DJ as well. He's such a big DJ in the Afro House scene. And having conversations with these people kind of showed me that there's something bigger than the box that I've put myself back home in Zambia. And then the other experiences I had on the trip was with Greg. So Greg is Black Coffee's, I think, tour manager. So I had opened for Black Coffee like a year before I won the Axe competition, and Greg was here. And obviously, because of the show, the pleasantries were there, the highs, the what, you know, the take the photos, everything. So I remember meeting Greg again on that trip. And, you know, he took time to, whatever weird questions I had asked, he took time to answer, you know, give me insight on the world that they are in, and the music scene, the Afro House music scene, and all of that. I met people like Benny T as well, you know, who was huge. At the time, Memeza had just come out, and he was huge, you know. So I think my experience meeting people who were successful at the game kind of really opened my mind up. Sitting down with Black Coffee, you know, so weird. We had dinner. I remember we had dinner while we were in Ibiza, one of the fancy places, the night before Black Coffee was playing at, the same night Black Coffee was playing at what's this club called? Oh, I just forgot the name. The biggest club. It's basically the biggest club in the world. High Ibiza, yes. So the night Black Coffee was playing at High Ibiza, we had dinner before. So we sit on the table, and for some reason, I don't know what happens, Black Coffee sat next to me. And I'm just freaking out, like, oh my gosh, this guy is my idol. And he walks around the table and he picks the chair right next to me. And I'm just like, okay, this is crazy. So in the process there, you know, kept my calm, kept my cool. We had conversation, you know, he gave me insight. And one of the things that he told me that really changed my life was that whatever you do, you cannot, because I had spoken to him, like I had thought about relocating at that time to South Africa because the scene is bigger there. And I asked him, like, I think it'd be a good idea if I relocated to South Africa. He told me no. He told me that if you don't become a superstar in your own home, you will not conquer someone else's country.
Yep.
So if you can't be a king in your own country, you can't conquer another country. That's just how it works. And it opened my mind up so much that by the time I was leaving the island, coming back to Zambia, I had figured out a plan of what I wanted to be, what I wanted to sound like, what I wanted to do, you know, how I wanted to push dance music in this country and be like a leader when it comes to showcasing that Zambia can be a hub for dance music to the rest of the world. So when I came back, I went straight in the studio, started remixing songs, got my first release on an international label, and the rest is history.
Which really it is, because you've from that time, I feel like when you had come back, people who know you, I feel like we felt like there was an energy shift, like something different. You had some sort of experience because you came back, obviously coming out of the slump of grief and all these other things that you'd been in. And I think it became very evident because now you were even back to releasing music. And since that time, I feel like you've been, whether it's like a few singles and not necessarily EPs, albums, whatever, you've been very consistent. And I think you're one of the few DJs who is consistent in terms of releases.
Yeah. And one of the other things I learned also during that process, after I came back and it changed how I released music, was that there are labels out there that want our music and are willing to put out our music for us. So one of the first labels I worked with was an underground label called Equa Brothers. So these guys basically accepted my music, flew me. Actually, we actually even had a gig in South Africa, which was a label showcase, which I had gone to. And again, that was another life-changing experience, because at that showcase, I would say maybe some of the biggest Afro House DJs right now, we hang out with those people so much that a brotherhood kind of developed that to this day, my communication with people like the guys from Kususa, Aesthetic Soul, Cuba, who is really big, like it all developed from that little label meet that we had, you know. So a lot of people in Zambia think I don't put out music, but if you check TrackSource, if you check Apple Music, Spotify, you'll find a ton of my music. And everyone's like, wait, when did these songs come out? So because the industry in Zambia is kind of set up in a way where every time you release a song, Zambian music blog, not that I'm hating on them or anything, but just that's just the system. Zambian music blogs pick up your song, put it out for free, then you have to share blogs and, you know, that process. I kind of changed. I said, look, this is not going to help us internationally. Let me reach out to labels outside Zambia, let them release my music, and then I reverse market it back here. So that's one of the things that maybe makes people think this guy's not putting out music, he's just DJing. But the music is out there. It's just not out there for free.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's the thing, is people are so used to, whether it's a few singles or whatever, having access to free music from local artists. And I think, if you're a real fan, then you know you've been finding the music, because I find it when I'm on Apple Music or if I'm using my So I enjoy certain things that I've heard you do. And speaking of releases, So you just decided that you were going to blow everybody out of the water and work with Mag 44 and release the Smoke and Thunder compilation album featuring like the who's who of artists. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even understand. Like, how did this come about? Like, what has that experience been like?
Ah, Smoke and Thunder is... It's one of, I think, one of my favorite brainchilds. There's a bit of bittersweet feeling about it because I honestly wish the album had come out at the time when we had Day of Thunder and we could market it extensively and do tours and launches and shows, you know. But obviously with the pandemic, we're really tied down to what we could do with that piece of work. But
so Smoke and Thunder. Let me just interrupt. Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, the reason why Sebastian's mentioning Day of Thunder is that's Mossy Day of Thunder, the annual event. And it's because your album is powered by Mossy Premium Lager, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
All right. You can go ahead.
Yeah. So Smoke and Thunder, I've always wanted to do this huge compilation album. With all the big names, you know, just to showcase Zambian music, you know, but through my mind. So the original plan was gonna be to make an album, feature all these guys, kind of like Power of the Drum, you know, to feature all these guys on it. And halfway through the process, I thought, look, maybe let me showcase what other producers are able to do and what other artists are able to do. And once this idea was basically sold to Mossy and they liked it, I said, okay, then let's try and include as many people as we could. So what had happened is that we were preparing for Day of Thunder last year. And because it was canceled, Mossy basically hosted an artist meeting to tell us, listen, we can't do the show. If you've got any great ideas, let us know. We'll sponsor you. Cool. So at that kind of like luncheon, if I could say that, Sibs, who is the marketing director for Zambia Breweries, basically called out for suggestions. Nobody suggested any. And I said, look, I've always wanted to do a compilation album which features all the artists. So because we've got artists that are already scheduled to perform at Day of Thunder, we could make that album and use these artists as a starting point for the rest of the album. And he was like, okay, good idea. Please talk to me before we go. I was like, okay, cool. So at that time, me and him discussed, like lightly discussed the album. And he said, just put this on paper and send it to me and then we'll go through it and then we'll make it work. So at that time, I already knew this is gonna happen. I was so confident that the album was gonna happen. So the first thing that came to my mind was Mag 44 because like I've always wanted to do, like I even told myself that if I ever get to do another album like Power of the Drum, Mag 44 will be my executive producer because I just like how he puts together projects. Like, you know, he's obviously a great producer. He's a great musician, you know, but he's got a way that he puts together these projects, you know. We've seen it in his albums. They're always great, you know. So I'd always told myself that if KB won't be my executive producer, KB Killer Beats, then Mag 44 will be my executive producer. And because Mag 44 was there that day when I gave out the idea, me and him basically had like a small discussion afterwards, like, you know what, you would be the best person to be the executive producer for this. So he was like, okay, cool, yeah. So afterwards, as I was waiting to send the paperwork out, we basically had this chat. I basically called Mark Fedfan and said, listen, we reached the point at which we need to submit paperwork and you're the executive producer. Whatever it takes, I want you on this. I want you to help me make this happen. He was like, okay, cool. So Mag assembled a team. That would be admin. They basically did the whole thing. They were admin. They were everything that needed to happen. Everything ran through Mag 44's camp. Like, these guys literally made my life so easy. I literally had to just focus on the music. So after that, the paperwork was prepared. ZB agreed. They came on board with us, and me and Mag had these back and forth meetings. You know, we would disagree on stuff, agree. You know, it was always like something, you know. But eventually we came up with the roster of the people we wanted on the album, the combinations of the people wanted on the album, and the producers we wanted to participate with on the album, you know. And Solomon Plate was kind of like in charge of the music there, like music production. So every person would contribute their production, then me and Solomon would go in and listen, and then Solomon would add additional production where need be.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how this whole album like kind of started taking shape, you know. So I basically sat in most of the sessions contributing, I like working on the music with the people. It wasn't just, so the first, we did like 6 songs the right way, and then the other songs we couldn't do them the right way because that's the time the second wave had hit, so I couldn't be in studio sessions. So there's a couple of songs on the album which were basically Solomon and the producer and the artists like working to make those songs work, you know, without me being directly involved because of the pandemic, because I couldn't sit through sessions, because like, you know, I couldn't be everywhere because of the pandemic. So eventually the album was done and we reached a point where like, okay, we needed to release. So the album was actually supposed to be an audiovisual experience. That's why we had focused so much on creating these visual textures. You can see the album art. You can see how the album was. Yes, because the album was actually supposed to be an audio visual experience. So I had we had put Emmanuel EMR, Emmanuel Mueller. He's the person who does the impressions brand. He's basically the person who is behind the Impressions brand. He's such an amazing visual artist. So we had tagged him on to be the visual artist and visual producer for the whole album. So the album was supposed to be the behind the scenes movie, which is out, available on YouTube. The actual album itself, the audio album, and an animated movie. Yeah. So eventually after the album was done, the behind the scenes movie came out and the album eventually came out. But the animated movie never got done. And it's kind of still, you know, like, I'm still mad about it because there is a great story behind the album. You know, there is a huge story behind the album. It's not just like a bunch of songs thrown together. So there is definitely something there.
I now want to see the anime. You know, I even love animation, and you know, it's one of my favorite. I love anything that's audio visual, obviously. That's my vibe, is audio and visual. So I would really love to see it. Like, can't we make this happen, guys?
You know what? I've been thinking, like, so we did contract someone to do it, but they said they were overwhelmed with the amount of work and were not able to produce the movie. So me and Mag just agreed to instead shoot a couple of music videos, you know, just for the visual perspective. But the whole story was supposed to be told properly through the animated movie, and the songs would have made so much more sense when you watch what was going on in the animated movie. But yeah, story for another day.
Yeah, indeed. But I also think that that's just so great because even just having the behind the scenes, it's something that some artists have started doing more and more of when they release music. Animation is something people are now more and more incorporating as like in our local context, which I think is a beautiful thing because there's so many different ways to experience music and to help further the story and tell the story of it. And I also think giving people a behind the scenes, it takes me back to when you used to watch MTV and watch like when they were doing the MTV Diary or making of the video.
Like,
interesting to see all those things because I think that's where I developed a thing about, oh, filmmaking isn't just making movies. You can make music videos. Like, oh, this is how people do this. This is how it all comes together. There's so much work that goes into 2 minutes and 30 seconds, you know?
Yes.
So I just want to touch on with, for me, the album and the experience that you have with it is, I mean, it's amazing. You've got people like Toella, you've got Mumbayachi, you've got your Mackie Twos, your Sheffies, you've got mm-hmm. your Tilos, your Bobby East, but then you also have your Nasty D, your Maureen Lalanda. And it's like mixing the old school or bridging the gap between the old school and the new school in a way.
Yeah.
And I think it's just an amazing thing that you can have all these different musical worlds coming together in one album. So can you talk a little bit about that?
You know what's so weird is that the first idea for Smoke and Thunder was gonna be young artists and new artists on one song. Like the pairings were gonna be like for example, the way the Tilo Chef song came out, that's basically like what we had thought about to do like for the rest of the album. Like if we could get like new artists, we did it on some songs, and you can see that the idea was still kind of stuck, like having Makitu, Chuze, and Maureen Niland on one song. That's like three generations of Zambian music.
Mm.
So the original idea was gonna be to get a younger artists and fuse them up with the accomplished stable artists, if I could say. So that kind of didn't stick, but I still emphasize that regardless of what happens on the project, I really, really wanted a lot of young artists to have the opportunity to work with some of the big artists. So for example, like I said, Tilo and Chef, you know, and the producer for that song, Young Boss, is an upcoming electronic music producer in Zambia, and he's really good. And he had the opportunity to work with someone as big as Chef. And after that, I know for sure that after that, his career now has taken, it's boosted. Like, you know, not that I'm taking credit for the growth of his career, but at least I participated in giving him an opportunity to work with some of the biggest artists in the country.
Yeah, the same thing. You've seen sort of the beginnings of how he's about to like now blow up.
Exactly. The same thing with Chuze, you know, when I met Chuze, I was already a fan of his music. His music was growing. He's big on the Copper Belt. Put him with Mac 2. Mac 2 is one of the biggest artists in the country. Put him on a song with Mac 2. Put him on a song with Maureen Lilanda. Let him get the respect that he deserves, you know. It's small little things like that that I really wanted to come out on the album, and they really made me happy, you know. A song like Natasha Chance and Slap D, you know. I know they did a song before, just like while we were preparing to do Smoke and Thunder, they also started working on a song. So there was great chemistry already for them, you know. Having James Sakala, Tim Cleo on a song, that's crazy, you know, things like that. And of course, I got to work with one of the people that I adore so much in the industry, which is Mumbayachi, you know.
Yeah. No, I think that's so amazing that you guys managed to pull this off. Because I know it also, I mean, thankfully, as you said, you managed to get with Mag, who just had a team who were amazing with doing the administration, because organizing that many artists, you? Uh-uh.
H. It is. Oh, my gosh. I think that was the worst part of the process. Like, I was telling Mag, like, I can't wait for us to actually start working, because there was so much writing contracts and like so much admin work and Excel sheets, and I'm like, no, I just want to make music. But they really, really did help make all of this work for me.
But as much as it was not your favorite thing to do as a creative, do you not feel like it's been valuable to see that process or be a part of it? Because contracts and all those things are something that I think sometimes we take for granted, and that's how we get screwed over.
Yeah, yes, it's very true. And I basically don't enjoy doing paperwork, but it's something that I still do 100%. To be honest, I've also developed in the last 3-4 years of my career, I've also just been improving my business sense, developing my business sense. And this is, I think, one thing that I guess gets me sponsorships, and I work with brands, because I kind of have learned how the business works, especially when it comes with brands. Like, I've basically put myself in the right position to have conversations with those people the right way, and to learn how their business works, to learn how I present myself as not only as a DJ or as an entertainer, but as a brand, as a business as well. So it's very important that artists don't shy away from things like that, especially that management system in Zambia is broken and we don't have that many great music managers here. It's always nice for the artist to pick up a nugget, read, you know, improve your own knowledge, you know, be better for yourself. Like another, like a decision I made throughout my career is I'll always be in school one way or the other. You know, so when I started off, when I was at Rock FM, I was doing accounting. Now I'm studying marketing, you know, and I'm not going to school because my career will fail and I'll need a backup job. No, I'm going to school because whatever I learn in the classroom, whatever I'm educating myself on, I will apply to myself and my business. I'll be a better accountant because I got some accountant's knowledge. I'll be a better marketer because I'm getting some marketing knowledge. So these things can be applied back to my brand, how I sell myself, how I present myself, you know, how I work with my numbers, how I pay my taxes and all of those things, you know. So people must never get this notion also that because you're a musician, don't go to school. Because you're in school, you don't need to do art. The two can always combine. And school is...
Sorry, say that again. School is...
School is not for getting jobs. It's for educating yourself. It's for learning a skill.
I love that. And with that, Sebastian, I think we can end today's conversation. But really quickly, before we go, I would love it if you could just tell the people where to find you on social media and where also your music is found, which platforms, so that they can get their hands on Smoke the Thunders and any of the other remixes and releases that you've done.
Okay. So thank you for having me on this podcast, finally. It's very nice to have an open conversation and talk about these things. So if anybody needs to reach me, Sebastian Dutch on Twitter, that's SebastianDutch. Most people spell Sebastian with an A. It's actually with an E. On Facebook, it's the same thing, Sebastian Dutch. And on Instagram, it's the same thing, Sebastian Dutch. If you are on any digital streaming platforms, you can also search for me, Sebastian Dutch. You'll find all my music available there, including my remixes, and as well as the brand new Smoke and Thunder, which is also available for purchase on Vesesani, which is Zambia's biggest music store.
Tell people why they need to buy from Vesesani, because isn't the money more directly going to come towards all you guys, the artists?
So, yes, Vesesani is actually a better buying platform if you want to support our music than streaming. You know, streaming numbers are really bad. It's like $0.00001 per stream or something. So you have to get like a 100,000 streams to even see any like proper money, you know, which is so weird. I have no idea why streaming is like that. But when you buy music, especially Zambian music from Vesesani, you support the artist directly. Vesesani's terms and conditions are so good. They support the artist so much. So you buy from Vesesani's 100 kwacha, you can buy using mobile money or your cards, you support the musicians directly.
Yeah, so guys, please make sure that you follow Sebastian Dutch, that you make sure that you stream the music. More importantly, purchase Smoke and Thunder on Vesesani. And thank you so much for being on my podcast today.
Thank you for hosting me, Lee.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Conversations with Lila B. Before we go, show some love for your favorite podcast by giving us a star on Anchor FM, leaving us a voice message, and commenting on our social media platforms. Remember, you can support the podcast and help us grow via donations at www.buymeacoffee.com/Lila B. Stay tuned for the next episode coming your way soon.